trust is obviously different in like the personal realm than in the professional realm. Trust is different because relationships are different, because what matters is different. And that's why you're always listening first for what matters. And that's why I have that title of that book, Listening for Candor, because I say real candor is not my opinion, but it is what I really care about and what matters. That will make a big, big difference. When we have something that matters to us now, and we can settle into that, then very next obvious thing is, well, what's important, given that this matters, what's important to pay attention to? What else is relevant that demands our attention? And help me understand why and how it works from your point of view. And here's how I see it. Notice you're not arguing here. You're just exploring together. And at some point, then a very curious thing happens. You start to say, well, you know, this could be possible. Or how about that? Or, you know, if we invited so-and-so in, we might be able to do da-da-da-da-da. So possibilities start to be taking shape, all built from what matters and what's important to pay attention to. And then this is the miracle that can happen, is that you can get a sense of resonance that we both are making sense of our circumstance in the same way. And then it only makes sense that we do this. Bang. Now, you manage to do all that without arguing.
Hi, I am your host, Raquel Ark, and welcome to your Listening Superpower podcast. This show opens your mind on ways to transform challenging conversations into opportunities for clarity, connection, and ease at work and at home. Discover how to grow your listening superpower to help you become a more effective communicator. Be inspired by conversations with authors, scientists, and leaders that will help you grow your leadership toolbox with strategies that you can use right away. Let's work smarter and feel better with our listening superpower. In meetings, often there are opinions being thrown around and power at play. And when this happens, we can often feel drowned out or overlooked or even silenced. My next guest, Peter Jovakovsky, talks about how to build trust by listening to what really matters and how this impacts commitment and responsibility. Peter has an extensive background in the linguistics foundations of trust and communication, having studied and worked with Dr. Fernando Flores since the 1980s and being certified by the Strozzi Institute as a master somatic coach. Over the past three decades, Peter has coached families and executive teams in building and restoring trust. Prior to his consulting career, Peter practiced internal medicine as a board-certified internist after graduating from Stanford University and the UC Davis Medical School. He recently published a book, Listening for Candor, which illuminates a path for trust conversations by building on a shared sense of what matters. In this episode, Peter shares how to pause and truly listening and recognizing what truly matters, even in these really stressful, trust-broken situations, and how to build that trust back up so that we can move forward and work together towards shared goals. Enjoy listening in. Welcome to the Listening Superpower podcast, Peter. It's really a pleasure to have you with me today.
Thank you. And it's a pleasure to be here.
So I was curious, when did you first start to notice the power of listening, whether it worked or it didn't?
That is a very intriguing question. I think it happened way back in the early 80s when I met Fernando Flores and became really engaged with what is communication, and then the other side of speech, where there's the speech acts and the various commitments that we make in speaking. But the other side of it is listening, because you can make promises without saying, I promise. And you can receive requests with nobody saying, I request. So the skill of listening somehow emerged from paying attention to the intention of others. And it manifested, interestingly, as I began to think about this question, in a personalized license plate that I had in the early 80s on my little silver 280ZX that was listening, L-I-S-N-I-N-G. So somehow I got really entranced with that. At that time, I was practicing medicine. And the most intriguing part for me of medicine. Now, you got to know internal medicine is incredibly complex and all that. But the part I liked was actually having conversations with people, in essence, listening to their stories, but also engaging with them in a way that I could support their movement into the future. So, one example was an 85-year-old guy who was an 85-year-old guy who had been a chairman and the CEO of a very large company that you would recognize the name of, who is now retired. Nobody in his whole social space would ever argue with him or give him any kind of a no. He's just way too powerful and used to it. I was the guy who was willing to talk to him about his life and remind him that he's not going to live forever. You're going to die soon. But I can say that to anybody because we're all going to die soon.
But yeah, that's the human. That was the human side.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And boom, all of a sudden, different. And he would be, hey, how come you're not billing me more for this? We talked for 2 hours. And I told him, well, you're on Medicare. I can only bill so much. He says, you should bill a lot more. That was worth a lot. And I began to realize that the being able to interact with people had more to do with what they were up to than me. And mm-hmm. I had a little bit for guiding them, depending on, because for me, a diagnosis, because that's what I have to do, that's my job, is a way of saying, hey, this is what's going on, and this is how you go forward. Watch for this, take care of that, do this, da 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 da. So I would function as a guide, but my guidance only makes sense in their world. And I have to find out about that first rather than just prescribe what to do. Right. And that was an extraordinary great part of practicing medicine for quite a while.
I mean, you had a lot in what you just described. Just so that I understand, the license plate that you had as listening, was that while you were a doctor?
I was a doctor.
Yeah. And then you recognize also that in being able to do your job, that in order to connect with them, so they were able to move forward, you had to listen enough to be able to give the diagnosis or be able to communicate back to them in their words or a way that they would understand. And
No. It was a far more organic engagement.
Okay.
It's an engagement with where are you? How are you? And then remember, I have all this access to, blood tests, physical exam, all the tests I can order. And also they're presenting, hey, what's what they call the presenting complaint. Mm-hmm. So I'm not describing how you practice medicine. In the middle of that, I need to go, oh, this is who they are and where they are in their world, in their life, in their time.
Like the context.
Yeah, I have to understand all that. Otherwise, I'm purely a mechanical. Nobody practices medicine like this anymore. That's why I stopped. And we're talking now 50 years ago. And so we're in the middle of this. And then their world is like their stories about things. This 85-year-old guy had a world of all the different places he had gone and where he was presently going. I ran into him. I, went on a vacation once and stopped and visited him in Idaho. Why? Because he was up in Idaho, 85 years old, driving a big bulldozer, fixing some stuff on his land up there. That kind of a world. Now, in the middle of all this, he's got whatever his complaint is. Does he have a blood pressure thing? Does he have a this? Does he have a that? My job is to connect with him and open a way to move forward. and what to pay attention to as you go forward. Now, it's how do you take these kind of medications? What do you watch for while you're taking it? All that kind of stuff is orienting him on his path into the future. And check with me again in 6 months, whatever it is. Now, and all that is really organic. It's the coming in, okay, if you're going to watch for this, you know, and since your wife is going to be with you, there's all kinds of specifics, the contingent particularities of that conversation. It's not an algorithm. So then listening is not like an algorithmic discovery of information that then makes a decision going this way or that way. Listening is connecting with the world, the aspirations, the possibilities, the constraints of the other, and moving together to orient them for going forward. And I have a role there because in that case, I'm a physician. So I have a certain kind of responsibility, but I also bring a lot of, hey, this, watch out for this, pay attention to that, this is going to be okay, all that kind of thing that the average person can't bring to them. That's why they come to me. Then check back 6 months or whatever. So that's how that works. But that was then.
So this is my question. So here, so at the time you had this license plate made, you'd been inspired, you started to pay attention to listening, you maybe started, there was a reason why you had that license plate made. Maybe you didn't fully understand at that time, but there was something there that caused that license plate to be made. So you fast forward to today. And if you were to look back at the person who ordered that license plate and your understanding of what that license plate meant then and how you would perceive that now, what would you tell your younger self now?
That is a very interesting question. I mean, that was back in the days before cell phones. At one point in that car, I had a radio telephone.
Yeah, I remember this.
Before cell phones. Really? Yeah. And it's before the big bag cell phones and everything, you know, way back when it was a radio telephone in the car. Because, you know, what I would tell that guy is, you know, kind of good on you, but there's so much more. You know, it was more like I was engaged in the conversations and I wasn't consciously designing the conversations. Now, roll the tape forward 10 years and I left the practice of medicine. Well, maybe 10, 15 years. And I got engaged in more intensively studying communication, commitment, language, that kind of stuff, and ended up doing business consulting and designing business processes and coaching executives and all that kind of thing, executive teams. And that's where trust began to emerge as the big deal. See, yeah. So before it was kind of having conversations, paying attention to, you know, people come to me, patients, and enjoying that moment. Now, remember, in the background of that is all the complexity of internal medicine and design and diagnosis. But now I'm in a different place and I'm looking at the interplay of relationships, concerns, engagement, commitment. What's the overlying big deal, hardly ever spoken, is trust. And so I got engaged in this whole thing about trust. Now, which is cool. And then I got, just by one of those contingent events that happens that we can't predict or control, but we move left or we move right, and it takes us off on a different tangent, different course of life. And I look back at my life and I go, wow, that was one of those inflection points where I met this guy who was working with ultra high net worth families about trust. Now, it turns out the more I work with trust executive teams and work with trust in high net worth families, I mean, these are ultra high net worth families, the more I saw the interplay with power, interpersonal power. Where are you vulnerable? Do you think it might be dicey to bring up this topic? Then you kind of are more reticent, more holding back. Now, that has a cost. It has a cost in business, and has a cost in families, in what they call intimacy or connection. Then that connect, we're back at that connection thing. And in business, you have a big cost because you're actually missing some of the real contribution that people can make because they don't want to speak.
That's the silent voices.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So then that whole thing happened. And
before, I mean, I'm going to stop you for a second, because before you move on quickly again, I just want to go back and just pause for a moment, just thinking about our listeners. And I mean, we have a wide range of listeners, but we also have a lot of listeners who, you know, are working in the business world and, you know, and, you know, kind of working their way up in their profession. I get often questions about communication and power play, you know, in terms of hierarchy and stuff like this, you know? So often, you know, you might have someone that sees this really, you know, person with a lot of money and think everything's perfect. And what you're saying is that in part of what you were working with in terms of even coaching is not only with teams and the power plays that happen within the organization, but also for people who are very successful, that you think everything's honky-dory, but it's not. It's trust is a huge topic everywhere. And whether it's financially or whether it's just family dynamics or whatever, you know, who has power influences sometimes how communication dynamics play out. Whenever there's a feeling for vulnerability or people are hesitant about talking about things, this is where challenges come into play on all different levels, and especially with relationships, also with family and stuff. So I was thinking, if you could, what do you know now about how listening plays a role with power?
Oh, lovely question.
That's why I wanted to stop. And there's something here, and I don't want us to keep going. There's something really important. What's going on there, and what might be helpful for people to understand the dynamics there that might even support these conversations, whether they have a coach or they don't have a coach, in terms of the interplay of power.
Remember, there's two perspectives I have here.
Yeah.
One perspective is trying to orchestrate conversations for recovering trust.
So this is trust that has been lost. One thing is building trust from the very, that has to be built up.
Yeah, exactly. So and now I'm here trying to have that happen with two people. That's one thing. As I talk to them, here's what I'm trying to show. If you're paying attention first, listening for, remember there's listening, passive listening, but there's listening for, which is where you're engaging intentionally, bringing awareness and attention to, is this happening or not? What do I see here? It's a more active engagement. And so this, what I'm trying to get, try to advocate for is listening for what really matters. Now watch this. A lot of times, what matters is that I stay safe. And then what you find out is, oh, that person feels potentially threatened, potentially vulnerable, feels like they're looking upstream in a power differential. If you're going to get a good conversation there, you need to do something to ensure safety. Right. Now check this out. I'm going to return to that because I'm going to say there's another thing that you can find out. If you're listening for what really matters, sometimes for some people, what matters is I get my way. I'm seen to be right. I get to be the boss. You find yourself in an argument. Neither of those works very well to build trust, right? Now, remember, that's my charge, is I need to bring the competence in them for recovering trust, building trust. And neither of those, if you're listening for what matters, and what matters is I protect myself, or what matters is I'm right, that's not headed for building trust.
No.
So you need to move one step further and give up being right. Give up and look for what matters for us together. What matters for you and matters for me. What matters for us. Now, if you can find that and get aligned on that, the interesting phenomenon that occurs is suddenly the power differential, which was previously potentially a threat, now becomes an asset. if what matters for us both is then your ability, your capability and mine is all lined up. And that's why you can see sometimes an assistant to a very powerful CEO who's not at all intimidated by the CEO. Why? Because they don't feel vulnerable. They know that they're both up to the same thing, and she can say, or he can say, hey, don't forget you have this appointment, so you got to stop this now, get on and redirect them in ways that you go, how can they talk to somebody like that? Why? Because they're not afraid, because they have the sense that we're lined up in the same direction. Now, you can do the same thing in personal relationships. Trust is obviously different in the personal realm than in the professional realm. Trust is different because relationships are different, because what matters is different. And that's why you're always listening first for what matters. And that's why I have that title of that book, Listening for Candor, because I say real candor is not my opinion, but it is what I really care about and what matters. If I'm
Love
listening
this.
For what really matters, that will make a big, big difference.
So listening for candor is listening for what matters. What matters
yeah,
to
my
me.
Definition of candor. Remember,
your definition. What matters to me, what matters to you, what matters to us. Listening to all these different pieces and then how they impact. Well, the listening to us part is the part that is the step forward to building trust.
When we have something that matters to us now, and we can settle into that, then we can also, the very next obvious thing is, well, what's important, given that this matters, what's important to pay attention to? What else is relevant that demands our attention? And help me understand why and how it works from your point of view. And here's how I see it. Now, notice you're not arguing here. You're just exploring together. And at some point, then a very curious thing happens. You start to say, well, you know, this could be possible. Or how about that? Or, you know, if we invited so-and-so in, we might be able to do da-da-da-da-da. So possibilities start to be taking shape, all built from what matters and what's important to pay attention to. And then this is the miracle that can happen, is that you can get a sense of resonance that we both are making sense of our circumstance in the same way. And then it only makes sense that we do this. Bang. Now, you manage to do all that without arguing, without coming up with my opinion like you would get in somebody wanting to be right. Instead, it's what are we building together? And I think the most important thing is listening for what matters so that we can move together into what's fundamentally an unknown future.
At the beginning of our conversation, you said a phrase, and I wonder how it fits in here. You said the phrase, consciously designing conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're working with like these two people who are from a family that's wealthy and they have to have these conversations and there's a power play and there's you know, trust is shot. So you're there with the intention to help them build trust together. And then you walked us through these steps, you know, from the my winning or my feeling threatened to what we have in common, and then in exploring what matters for us and the possibilities that can take shape into an unknown future. So do you actually have a way to design conversations consciously to be able to manage those? It would be a challenging conversation. I would consider put that under the challenging conversation label, even if those challenging conversations can also be invigorating, right? Now, they're not always a bad thing. They can also be life-giving and energy-giving. Would you consider how you, that process that you described with candor listening as a way that you are designing a conscious conversation and helping these individuals to have a conscious conversation together?
Yes. Well, and what I've found is that people don't, our cultural understanding of what is communication is flawed. It's pretty weak. It's this idea that we're transmitting information back and forth, and good listening is accurately receiving information.
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
No, not at all.
We're very good at interpreting things.
Back when, you know.
Yeah, that model.
So
that model.
That notion is dead. So if we listen, so on the one hand, listening is not just receiving information. Listening is an engagement with the intention of another, but also all of that is illuminated with moods, emotions, affect, sensibilities that enable one person to see the situation one way and another person to see it another way. That's why I could see a person's health one way, but I'm a physician. I see it differently than they do. How do we bring that together? Et cetera, et cetera. All that is always going on. And if we can't get lined up on what really matters, we're in trouble. But it's also really helpful to understand the difference between, say, a statement of fact and an interpretation. It's dramatically different to voice an opinion than to claim something is so.
Can you give me an example, maybe sometime, where you had an opinion or did something where then through even whether it was your listening or even someone else listening to you, where it like, where that might've, that's probably what kind of like, you know, shook things up for you. And you realize, oh, and you had a learning from that.
You can hear it in every conversation today around. People enter a conversation with their opinion about Ukraine, about Gaza, about the government, about the economy, about the weather. No matter what, people enter with an opinion. I see it all the time. And if I look back at where I was way back then when you first began talking to me about this thing, I was like a horrible arguer. I was really, really good at arguing my point of view. If I got out of that role as a physician, you know, my siblings all are reluctant to argue with me because I'm such a good arguer. And I'm now at a place where I think argument is the wrong way to go. And so I have to disintoxicate myself from the attraction of being right. So how do I go with argue with opinions? Opinions are a setup for either, well, they're a setup for the domination thing, the coercion thing. I'm right. And either you're going to say, no, you're not, I'm right. Or you're going to say, okay, I'll go along to get along. So a strong opinion invites either argument or cordial hypocrisy. Neither one is a good way to move into a future together. And my claim is the important thing now is how do we find a way to move together into the future? Because the future looks pretty turbulent.
Yeah. You know, I was just thinking...
So I didn't quite answer your question, but I'm...
No, but that's okay. You know, just thinking about what you just said, in the last, I would say, few months, I have heard a handful of times from people that I've coached that they were told that they need to have more voice, that they need to speak up, you know, kind of thing. You know, I question the interpretation of this. I think that can be why someone tells them that and how they interpret it. I think there's, I think that can be very interpreted very, very differently. And so often what happens is that people think, oh, I have to share my opinion. I didn't share my opinion, or I wasn't clear enough about my opinion. I'm like, no. I don't believe that. I mean, I think that yes, sometimes maybe we do, but I wonder if it's more about connecting with the people that are in the room. Somehow. And the idea, it's not just about having an opinion. So people misinterpret having confidence or showing your confidence or sharing a voice or whatever with just having an opinion. But how many conversations have we been in, or how often do you go to a meeting where these, you know, back and forth opinion conversations are going and everybody's just exhausted? No, you haven't really gotten any farther except for maybe one person dominating and other people not being aligned, you know? So, you know, I question that, you know, in terms of having voice, amidst the power plays. That's hard. That's really hard, especially when the person is not the person of power. So how do you, if you have someone who has lower power in the hierarchy of work, let's say, and they're told to have voice, but they're in a situation where you have a dominant boss or a dominant person there who isn't respecting that power, then what would be some techniques you could help for the person who's silent or who is just, you know, who doesn't say anything to be able to have voice, but in a way that brings the we, the candor, even if the other person can't manage it.
Let me answer that question by taking the long on-ramp to it.
All right.
It'll look like I'm starting from nowhere, but I will get there really.
Hang on, everyone, put the seatbelts on.
Where I've been effective in doing this in like direct interaction with individuals to make them more skillful has been in a learning engagement, but it's a very challenging learning engagement because they're going to learn about trust and communication. And people already know about trust and communication. So it's a very challenging to learn something you already know. So you basically have to unlearn what you already know to relearn what you already know. It's a funny thing. So just like this thing about listening is not hearing, notion of what is an opinion? What is an opinion? How does an opinion form? What is going on in having an opinion? Totally unexamined, totally not thought. So first, to go down that track is like super, super important because then people recognize, oh, if I'm engaging with somebody's opinion, what am I engaging with?
That's a good question. What am I engaging with?
See, and notice that, right. And if we have an offhand way of responding there without even considering the question, but just responding to the opinion, then I believe you're already disabled. When I work, part of what makes me expensive is because it actually works, but it takes time to learn. Learning isn't instant. People think that learning is like just, oh, once I understand, I know. Yeah, but once you understand and know, now you have to do. There's a big difference between knowing about and being able to do. Why? Because the moment we start to take action, we risk running into our emotionality, our affect. It doesn't feel good. I don't like it. I don't want it, et cetera. Now we're fortunate if we have enough recurrence that our affect carries us in the same direction as our intention. But when you're learning something new, it doesn't. You're running into cross currents. That's why it takes practice when you're learning something new. So I just watch out. I'm going there. Now I'm about to more directly answer your question, which is dealing with emotions directly. I mean, with opinions directly is usually a power game. Not always. With people you love, you can deal with their opinions in different ways. And with people who really love and care for you, you got a lot more room to do that in the personal space. But where there's a habit of power, or where there's a strong predisposition toward hierarchy, ranking, and power, like in business, you don't have quite that much room. So I recommend do not fight with opinions. Underneath that, then, is how do I move to have a voice? Now I'm trying to answer your question. And there, you're seeking to articulate what really matters. You're looking for a co-articulation, a co-design of what it is that matters here. In this circumstance, we've got this kind of challenge ahead of us. We have this kind of a market situation. We got this. And what matters is we do X, or that we accomplish Y, or what matters is this. And you get everybody lined up on what matters. Now you look at, well, what do we have to, I'm following that same track again, because now there's room to speak about what's important. Given this matters, we got to pay attention to that. Now, this is the case both in business, like in an operational sense, and in families, like how do we deal with living together? And we haven't we've referred to but haven't spoken about the big difference between an operational relationship and a personal relationship.
Yeah. Okay, so tell me more about that. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, because there's a spectrum there, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, at one far end of the spectrum are purely instrumental relationships. There, somebody's there just for getting something done and you can
replace transactional. Mm-hmm.
You could, worse than transactional.
Oh, worse than transactional.
All the way down to purely instrumental, where it's just, you could replace them with a robot. It doesn't call for any kind of presence. It calls for doing, pure doing. Mm. Okay, I'm not going to talk about those. Then you get into what I call transactional relationships, and you use the word, I'm fine with that. And I often say, I call them operational. You're getting something done. And that's what we're up to, is getting something done. Now, the horizon of concern is crucial to understand, that here it's the by when it needs to be accomplished. There's a bit on the side of, and don't make a mess over here and don't make a mess over there while you get it done. But it's all about the getting doneness of your circumstances, your situation, okay? Now, at the other part, at the whole other end of the spectrum, are these personal relationships. The horizon of concern doesn't have any delimitation. There's no future stop to it until you die. For instance, with your son, you care anyway. Now, he gets tangled up with some woman and has children. You already care. Already. You don't have a choice about it. It's coming to you anyway.
Exactly.
Right. Now, your son has something untoward occur, God forbid. You already are involved. I ended up in a hospital in Germany. My father was booking a flight.
Yep, right. If something happened to him, he's in California right now, I'd be right over there.
Exactly.
Right.
And but it's not like you think about it and consider, do I care? Your care is already there. You might find some other way to manifest care. You might have some friend who's super capable about dealing with whatever the circumstance is, who you could call and could help immediately. So, but notice, care, concern. I'm already involved. It happens over here, and it goes on and on and on, and you can't predict and control where it goes. That's very different than over on this operational side, where it's about promises. Fair? You see the, I'm drawing
the
a contrast
yeah.
because there's an overlap, because there sometimes you interact with somebody in a business setting for so long, you actually become in kind of, you start to care about how their kids are doing. And that their, you know, son got into this school, or their daughter did this, and then like that whole thing. You said, so I'm not saying it's clear.
Yeah, because sometimes even people need that a little bit of care to even get the operational stuff done. Like they'll get the basics done, but if they don't feel that care, or there's some level of relationship built, which is where that trust and that intimacy starts, kind of, you know, the different levels of that,
right,
then they may not be as productive because they have that, there's that need there and what matters. Mm-hmm.
Now, when we see that the horizon of concern has that range, that spectrum, we at the same time we recognize that, oh, that means the trust is different. Trust has a range.
That can have many different different levels of feeling
and
experiences.
So people think that trust is an on-off switch. I trust, I don't, and I can tell because I feel trusting or I don't. No. You can make very clear articulations of different aspects of trust. For instance, there's trust that is called on with every promise. Every promise pulls for, is it going to happen? And the is it going to happen has a number of aspects. Is it going to happen, like, do we have sufficient understanding of the circumstance to have any kind of confidence? Is it going to happen because the person who's performing, do they have the capability? Do they have the capability, like skill? And do they have the capability, have they done it before, similar things? And do they have the capability, like resources, time, network, et cetera? If those are missing or called into question or not so sure, your trust in the promise is different than, oh, do they have the personal character to have thought about this before committing? Do they have the character to and the skill to manage the unforeseen contingencies that may have to be communicated in a timely fashion, lest you inadvertently have something at risk, da 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 da, that you hadn't been thinking of? You see how that goes? So there's, and in the end, there's also, do they really mean what they say when they say, "I intend to do it"? That's sincerity. Does the voice of intention match their internal voice? And the match of that we call sincerity. You make a commitment in the social space. Does it match your internal conversations? Now, that's a whole different thing than over here on this other side, where you go, the main thing is, do we care about each other into the future? Remember, this future that has no ending. That's way different kinds of trust. Yeah, and still over here, you got to be home on time. And please remember to pick up the milk on your way home and manage all that operational stuff. But underneath is, but do we care to live together into an unknown future and we don't know what's going to happen next, really? So all of that is in trust. And so if we're going to manage and rebuild trust, A, we have to know where we are in the spectrum. B, we have to manage all this. And notice that what really matters over here is different than what really matters here. And that's why we need to be listening for that and building that first. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question, pay attention to what matters so that then you have a legitimate place to put your opinion. And we haven't even talked yet about what shapes opinions, but that's what's so important in an operational space, because in an operational space, what you care about is, do we have good illumination of the circumstances? Can we see what's going on and what we want to have happen, and so that we can more clearly anticipate the result of our efforts? That's why you have a specialist like this and a specialist like that. They bring sensibilities that inform their opinion, and you want to harvest the diversity of opinions in an appropriate fashion in a complex environment like business.
Did we cover a lot of ground there? We did. And, you know, I mean, I guess listening to this, it shows that, you know, often we want a simple answer, but there really isn't a simple answer to recognize that in communication interactions, whether it's at work or at home, and especially when there's power plays or people just need to feel right, or they need validated, or there's other stuff that there's a lot of layers and a lot in the spectrum. And so sometimes just taking a step back, and instead of trying to figure it out all the way, you know, all at once, but to take a step back and kind of look and see, where are things and what's really going on here? And what's, you know, what do we need to shine the light on? What do we need to understand better, you know, about the person, the situation, the context, or whatever. And then that helps to be able to navigate through that conversation and, or those conversations, because as you said, it's not just a one-off thing, right? It's a conversations that happen over time as we navigate to this. And especially when you think about, I love this, you know, it's true with family, you know, are we willing to focus on what matters into the unknown future? I didn't say exactly right, like you did, but I think, you know, that's really beautiful. And this can also be, you know, this is definitely with family. This can also be with a startup. This can also be with, you know, different new venture, you know, or coming together with a topic that people really care about and passionate about, you know, in terms of helping the environment or whatever, you know, there's also a certain level of commitment. And yet that's, even in those circumstances, it's different at the operational level and at this caring level. There's a lot of different layers there. So it's really interesting. I'd love to circle back to your book, The Listening and Listening for Candor. When you decided to write this book, what's your driving force for you personally behind this book? What's your driving force? Right.
What I found out is that what I was teaching people, I told you it's a learning thing. Learning and then coaching them to use what they learned. I realized when my own son went to university, you can't learn that there. What I teach people, you can't learn there. I've taught families that are all PhDs. I've taught families that are all lawyers. This is new news. So understanding communication and trust is a very different thing. So one, and so here I was working with in this kind of rarefied space of ultra, ultra, ultra high net worth families in super high-end executive teams. And then I realized, wait a second, this makes sense for everybody, everybody. Just because you're in a family where you're not facing a gradient of wealth of hundreds of millions of dollars, literally, 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 doesn't mean that you don't have to deal with the power differential between generations and deal with it in a way that you build connection and trust and relationship and affection and care in the process, rather than saying, well, I'm out of here because I can't stand it anymore.
Yeah.
There's got to be a better way to talk. And so then that's where I go, okay, good. So, and then I realize, oh, if I'm going to do that, what difference does it make? And I'm looking down now at the future myself as I, you know, I'm running out of runway myself. You know, I don't live forever either. And I realize, what can I contribute that could be of legitimate expectation that could help in this situation, in our time in history? And I'm looking at turbulence ahead, and even more reasons to disagree with people, and even more likelihood of bad relationships, of argument and nastiness. And I see it happening around. And so from my point of view, what we need to do is learn how to have conversations with people who see things differently. And in that little book, I do lay out a kind of formula for, but it's a, you got to have some background to take the formula, which is trying to answer your other question there. For, look, first pay attention to what matters. Then listen to other people's perspective. How do you see things? And actually listen to how they see it. And if you use the appropriate tone of voice, so you're not argumentative or interrogating them, but really, how do you see it? That's a sign of respect, I think, to listen to how other people see things. And that if we have that going on, we can build a shared sense of how things are working and go forward, and then something will change and we'll figure it out again. And that's how you go forward into a world that really is not predictable. And we're facing a lot of unpredictability right now. It's never been fully predictable.
No. But it seems to be getting more worse.
more so.
So I have a feeling.
And in there, you love people and have an opportunity to be happy. And
yeah, you know, I mean, these are the things where I hear it. You know, there's so much going on. You know, so having these tools to be able to hopefully stop or prevent or reverse the downward spiral that can happen, that's beautiful. And so I haven't had a chance to read it yet. I'm very looking forward to reading it soon. But I'm glad that we had this conversation. And if people want to read your book and have those tools to be able to prevent, reverse this downward spiral of losing trust, you know, and finding ways to build trust, to build relationships, even when we do see things differently, and also really tap into what really matters for us, so we can build an unknown future with more of an us in mind. How do they find you? How do they find your book?
Unlike what one might expect, I'm not hoping to develop my coaching practice by selling this book. The book is not intended to promote that. The book is intended to promote this idea of building trust and listening.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the game. Now, to contact me, one is to find the book, easy to do, Listening for Candor. It's on Amazon. Actually on the cover, I think, it says, you know, how to get to my website, you know, peterjohankowski.com. And in there, you can contact me. And I am very open to, because what I'm hoping to do is have people say, yeah, this is important. And then have people come to me with, hey, maybe we could do this, maybe we could do that. Because I don't want to lead with an exchange conversation trying to sell you some of my good ideas. I want to listen to your good ideas, see how I can in any way add and support that, add to and support. So then when you, for instance, wanted to talk to me about this podcast, I go, wow, that helps me do what I'm trying to do, helping you trying to do what you're trying to do about bringing this importance of listening as a superpower. I go, oh, okay, good. See, that's the kind of thing I'm hoping for. So you actually found me on LinkedIn, and I'm available on LinkedIn too. And if you track back in there to my website, there's actually a contact me kind of thing where I can be contacted. And so that's the game.
We'll add the links to the notes of the podcast for anybody who's interested. And it was really a wonderful conversation. Very exciting. I'm sure our listeners really enjoy thinking more and deeper about this whole power play, about building trust, about how listening plays a huge role in that. I think what you described helps to expand a perspective on what that means and what to pay attention to. And that's a huge value. So thank you very much, Peter.
I'm your host, Raquel Ark, and you have just enjoyed your Listening Superpower podcast. This is an independent show, so please show your support by subscribing, leaving a 5-star review, and sharing with your friends. I love to hear from my listeners. What you love, what questions you have, any great guests that you have for the podcast. Email me at listeningsuperpower@gmail.com or send a voicemail at +49 173 234 0722. Check out listeningalchemy.com if you want to help your team communicate more effectively together. We focus on evidence-based listening strategies, and we do it in a playful and experiential way so that your team can work better and feel better together. Thank you, Cecilia Mercado, for your amazing podcast production, Ivo Thiemann for your inspiring music, and Dorte Streicher for your impactful artwork. It's been fun, and see you on the next episode.